Next item on the agenda is Moon and Norfolk Conveyance.
Thanks for help. The records of the job would have to have to count.
Mr. Bull.
Commissioner, members of the commission, good morning. This is commission consideration of the appropriate terms and conditions and just compensation for the conveyance of 2.49 acres of previously filled state-owned subaqueous lands that are, lie along the Elizabeth River in Norfolk. You'll note that this was authorized both by Chapter 884 Acts of Assembly 2006 and further limited by a subsequent Act, Chapter 879 Acts of Assembly 2007. This is a copy of an 1892 nautical chart of Hampton Roads. It basically shows in the circle the area that is in question as it appeared in 1892. This is a Google map. You'll notice that the current area with the condominiums and PETA lies to the southeast. The Moon property is here. The Fort Norfolk property we'll be discussing is at the head of the slip. And that's the subsequent item on conveyance on the agenda. A slightly closer aerial photograph of the parcel in question. As a way, by way of history, Acts, Chapter 884, Acts of 2006, that was approved and signed by the governor, approved by the legislature, actually described an area delineated by the meets and bounds that you'll see around the perimeter. And it described 148,000 square feet, or 3.40 acres. After the legislature had approved that conveyance, there was an amendment to the budget bill, section 4-5, or not an amendment, but an inclusion in the budget bill, 4-5.11, that basically stated, except for subaqueous lands that have been filled prior to January 2006, the governor shall not sell or convey those subaqueous lands identified by the meets and bounds in Chapter 884. So they limited what could be conveyed. The following year, in 2007, the legislature reenacted Chapter 884, and you'll recall that there was a change that provided for fair market value to the new formula that was being used by the commission. The meets and bounds, however, a description of the parcel, the entire large parcel, which included both filled and unfilled lands, remained unchanged. At that same General Assembly session, a companion chapter, or another chapter, Chapter 879, was enacted, which today appears as 28.2-1200.1 in your code, and that basically set forth the formula that we're using now, as opposed to fair market value. Basically, that the grantee shall compensate the Commonwealth in an amount commensurate with the property interest conveyed. And as the Commissioner has mentioned prior, Mr. Holland very eloquently during the General Assembly talked about the property right that was the underlying fee, and the filled property was actually owned by the upland property owner. But there is a property interest, much like or similar, I guess, to mineral rights, water rights, air rights, that are, you know, is the bundle of stick that goes in the bundle of your property rights. The legislature decided that what that property interest should be was equivalent to 25% of the assessed value. Again, they just picked that, and part of the rationale was that the assessed value is going to differ between heavily developed urban areas like Norfolk and Virginia Beach, as opposed to the assessed value in Westmoreland and Northumberland. So you build into the assessment rate, even though it's dimensionless per se, that value of the property in different areas. And they also very arbitrarily said that the assessed value is the average of the local real estate assessments for the preceding 10 years. They could have done 30%, 15%, they could have done 10 or 15 years, but that's the formula that was provided. It did say that if no such assessments were available, then the value was calculated as the percentage by either square footage or acreage that the specific parcel was of the larger parcel, that percentage, for which the assessments were available. That same act of the Assembly also provided to the Commission the opportunity to determine that unique circumstances exist, which would allow the Commission to convey the grant for something less than 25% of the assessed value. And you'll recall that the Secretary has previously provided a letter indicating to the Commission what his thoughts were on what would constitute unique circumstances. In 2006, as a result of the budget amendment and the change, counsel for the grantee basically said, acknowledged that we're really talking about in the overall large parcel, areas that were filled as well as areas that were unfilled and for which the law prohibits, the conveyance. If you just look at that upland parcel, that at the time was 22.24% of the assessment, and the some acres filled land was 77.76%. The upland parcel, which is the upland that was landward of what was being delineated at the time and is shown in red, has an estimated 1871 NEMA watermark, which would have been at that time the boundary between upland property and state property. And that's, as you recall, was as a result of the Boundary Act of 1819, where Virginia went from being a high water state to a low water state. The legislature gave away the intertidal area. So this was the delineation back in August of 2006. Based on that, these were the calculations, and you previously saw the percentages that were depicted on the plat. Again, the aerial. Over the intervening year, and we continue to work with Mr. Knoll and Williams Mullen on this as well as the next one. And several months ago, a member of my staff, Ben McGinnis, actually started to research to see if he could find any old charts or maps that were found of the area in question. So what you'll see in the next series of slides are depictions of the lithographs that we were able to get from the Library of Congress. This first, however, is merely a harbor plan, and this will show the area. This is the general area that we're talking about along the Elizabeth River. This chart was in 1861. This is just a zoom in on it. As you'll see in other areas, there was a dry dock that existed, ship repair, building yard at this point, and the shoreline to the south was basically undeveloped. What I've done now is the next three lithographs that were in the Library of Congress admittedly depict what the area was like in the city of Norfolk at various time frames. This is 1873, and what we'll be doing is zooming in a little bit closer on the area in question. Excuse me, I circled that wrong. It's the area in question here to the north of the entrance. Again, just zooming in on the chart. What this shows that in 1873, and keeping in mind that Chris had showed the 1871 estimated, you see that the area that is now depicted as where the condominiums in PETA are basically had deep water. There were sailboats, and deep water is a relative term, sailboats and ships that came through here. You'll see the area that we're talking about, Moon Engineering and Front Street, was basically an undeveloped shoreline. This area, it's interesting to note, was apparently a lumber yard and a rail line that came around with a section that opened up, which allowed deep water access on the other side for ships loading and unloading, timber products. And again, this particular area was, as indicated on the earlier a railway, you know, to haul vessels and slips. Moving forward to 1891, and again, this will come in on to this area. You'll now note that the area where the current-day condominiums and Peter are located was filled. There are basically structures on the upland. The area where Moon Engineering is located had a pier. I would imagine that what this is a bulkheaded area as opposed to open pile, because you do have structures that are on it, but fill that's occurred. The lumber yard that previously had the railway and access has been filled, and lumber now is being stored, you know, along here. You still have the railway and slips and the marine facility. So filling was occurring, and it was legally occurring to the best of our understanding. The final one that we have is another panorama of Norfolk in 1892, and again, slightly later, but shows the same thing, and that basically the area was filled and developed. Again, the particular chart from the nautical chart. So we're looking at basically this portion, which we believe is admittedly filled, that occurred over state-owned bottom. What has recently happened is we've been working with we're working with surveyors that Mr. Nolan and Mr. Duvall have provided. And some question was raised as to where this actual boundary was. Admittedly, the lithographs give a perspective. And as you saw in the 1871 photograph, the bridge came across, but Water Street was undeveloped, and the road came up to Front Street. That'll become important, basically, in just the submittal that Chris, the supplemental submittal that Chris has provided, which tries to tie the fill to a Norfolk 1898 case, which was Norfolk versus Nottingham. But in looking at it, and from a staff perspective, admitting that there's some inability to delineate precisely where that mean low watermark was, there was a gray area. What we're recommending is that, again, this is the entire parcel, and the conveyance would run back to the description on the red area through meets and bounds. But we're recommending that the commission assess compensation for this particular fill area, that while the commission convey this area, because it is fill property and you need to quiet title essentially, we're uncomfortable, or we're willing to concede that that may have been upland at some point, and so we're recommending that we can this particular parcel, 15,000 square feet, be conveyed with no compensation, that the compensation deal with the other. If one takes that, then basically you're changing the percentages in the upland parcel. Again, remembering that the compensation is based on the percentage of the assessment. The upland parcel increases to 33.58%. The other area is 66.42%, so there's a drop between 77% and 66%. These are, again, you know, just the mathematics that we went through to come up with those percentages. If you then use that, and again, the total area being conveyed is 139,474 square feet. The area being conveyed was described as 2.49 acres plus or minus. The information provided by the Mr. Nolan on behalf of his clients indicate that the 10-year average assessment, exclusive of buildings and improvements, was $597,410. If you then account for the percentage that filled property is of the upland assessment, you come up with $396,799.72, and then, quite frankly, using the formula, if you apply the 25%, it comes up with $99,199.93. And of course, using that valuation, that would be staff's recommendation. Go back here. Chris may want to look at some of these. Mr. Nolan has submitted some supplemental information that was sent out with the packet last week. He does raise, you know, two issues as far as the compensation rate. One is that his clients have owned it in the family since 1943. So there's a long-term ownership of this particular parcel, and they felt that they had owned it and have been paying taxes on it. The other is the 1898 case that Chris referenced, the Norfolk versus Nottingham. And the only reason we question, I mean, we agree to a certain extent, it's germane, but in 1873, which is 16 years, 1898, 73, 26 years, prior to that, you see that what might have been water, and again, this is a perspective, what might have most likely was Water Street coming across would have extended in this fashion. The 1871-1873 line that both Chris used and is depicted here is irregular. There's no way to tie it in. But at the time that the Norfolk versus Nottingham case was done in 1898, there's no way to know whether Water Street was improved or whether the court was deciding that you're really talking about some buildable lots that were on the upland between Front Street, which is this street here, and what would have been a platted Water Street. But basically, those are the slides that we have, the presentation and the staff recommendation. So with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Any questions for Bob? I think you've done some, you and Ben have done some thorough research.
And enjoyed going to the Library of Congress and signing those things. And all they are, they're only illustrative of the history of the parcel.
Well, I'm just pleased with the fact finding that was undertaken to, you know, we like to get things right, especially when you're counting. But anyway, I really, and I've been heaping praise on staff a little bit today, but today's a couple of cases we've had have been really special where, you know, staff has gone the extra yard to do certain things, and I like to get it right. So anyway, thank you, Bob. Mr. Nolan? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, Chris Nolan with Williams Mullen, and I represent Mood of Norfolk, whose principals are Wayne James and William Thomas. They are brothers. And as Bob indicated, we are asking for the conveyance of approximately 108,000 square feet, as indicated in the staff report. As you can tell, we've been working with staff for about 3 years now. And this was the Moon property was the first piece that was subject to legislation here most recently that caused a debate as to how the commission should address these considerations in the future when you have previously filled subaqueous land that has been owned, used, and utilized by individuals for some period of time. Only to later find out that the full extent of the property rights they thought they had purchased were not theirs. And this has been a very interesting case. The legislation, as originally passed, charged you with assessing fair market value for that subaqueous land. And we worked with Wilford Kale for and Mr. Grab for about a year and couldn't come up with what that meant. So subsequent General Assembly passed 28.2-1200.1, and it set forth a valuation scheme, as Mr. Grab has indicated. But it also had a provision in there that allows the commission to depart from that formula for what are called unique circumstances. And in the General Assembly's infinite wisdom, it didn't give you a lot of guidance as to what that was. And later on, I'm going to admit some responsibility for that. Nonetheless, it grants the commission the authority to hear testimony and determine if a departure from that formula is merited. And that's really what we're here today to discuss with you. And I believe you received some guidance last year from the Secretary's office as to possible factors to consider. And I want to go through some of the factors in what I believe is the Thomas's benefit or way in their favor. And I'll do so briefly. I submitted to the Commission last week a letter that goes through several things that we would like for you to consider. First, it appears that this parcel was probably filled definitely before 1943, but most likely in the early 1900s. At a minimum, we have photographic evidence of prior to 1960, which is required. Well, photographs not required, but some type of evidence of filling occurring prior to 1960. There's no evidence that the property was filled illegally or by the current owners. They have not engaged in any unlawful filling. And the Thomases have had some beneficial ownership in this property for, well, since at least the 1950s. And the way that occurred was this was purchased by Moon Engineering. And the Thomases' father went to work for Moon Engineering and started acquiring stock. That was, even back then, there was this incentive to make employees part owners into the business. And eventually, he acquired all of the stock of the corporation. And this property was an asset of that corporation. When he died, the sons decided that they would cease operations as a ship repair facility. And they deeded the property to Moon of Norfolk, LLC, which was a closely held holding vessel for this real estate. Not uncommon transaction. And that was done so that they could look to selling the business and moving on. When this property was purchased, the deed description was as indicated in the staff slides as a large rectangle. It didn't make any delineation as to where the bulkhead was. The property lines went out to the slip on either side and went out channelward to the end of where the footprint currently is. And there has been no notice to the Thomases as to a defect in title until late 2005. And they were looking to sell the property, and they couldn't obtain title insurance. And I think the concept of notice is very important here, because if you look at the factors that the Secretary sent to you previously is to consider, underlying those is the concept of notice. What did the property owner know? When did they know it? And in this instance, there was no opportunity to know that there was this defect in title. The transfer that did occur was done with a closely held corporation. It was not an arm's length transaction. So there was no desire or need to get title insurance back in the 90s when that first conveyance out of the corporation into the family occurred. The owners have paid their real estate taxes. They are not delinquent. They have put this property to productive use for over 65 years. And I'd also note that in discussion with staff, this case has taken a lot of twists and turns of where you draw lines and what is the value and how does that factor into the compensation paid to the Commonwealth. I have taken the view that you take the entire rectangle, water and land, and that was basically your denominator, and you took your filled subaqueous as the numerator, and that was your ratio. Under the belief that we are being assessed for the full block. That's what the tax records show, is that full rectangle. But in speaking with staff last week, they took a different view, and we're not contesting that. And basically it is, they're just looking at the filled subaqueous versus all of the upland, if you will. And that caused us to call the assessor's office to determine whether we could show staff that, no, they were incorrect. What we learned was, in fact, that we were being assessed for about 20% more property than we actually own. And the reason that is relevant is because this whole valuation formula rests upon taking the average of 10 years' worth of assessments. And that assessment value is actually overstated by 20%. Granted, Moon can go and ask for an erroneous assessment to be corrected, but that only goes back 3 years. And again, we had no notice of this until this whole process started. And we never had a survey of the property until this process started. And only with the survey could we determine with some degree of accuracy what actual square footage that we owned. So this was a revelation to us last week, as to the overpayment, not just of the taxes, which for the last 3 years equals about $8,000, but the impact on this valuation formula is much greater. Because if you do the math, and I've got a sheet here showing that, instead of $99,000, if you lower the assessment by the 20% and do the calculations, the actual conveyance price would have been $79,000, approximately. And I can tell you that this situation was not contemplated by the General Assembly when this language was put into the statute. Staff mentioned the Supreme Court case of Norfolk v. Nottingham, and that was one of the reasons why this got delayed from January to this meeting. It's because we came into possession of this case and started researching it, and it references building lots south of Front Street but north of Water Street, and it was whether Water Street was ever accepted by the city, dedicated and accepted to be a public road, and the court determined that it was not. But that case indicated that there were at least building lots north of what was called Water Street, a street that was platted on a plat done prior to 1900. And also, if you look at this lithograph, there is an argument, since this is the Moon property, we've drawn the line very conservatively, that revised line, to cut back as a jag back toward Front Street, under the premise that there was filling occurring and not excavation. But I think that there is reasonable people could disagree as to looking at that and looking at the ultimate division here of the property of where that line could be drawn. It could just as easily be drawn in a more, I guess that would be, easterly direction. But in conversation with staff, if you came to this point, where do you go from here? And we would argue that you could still go back this way and be consistent with this here. And again, I concede that these are not surveys, they're lithographs, they're perspective drawings, so they're not scalable. We can't take this and overlay it onto a plat. But I just point out that this is a situation where you could have just as easily drawn the line a little bit differently. Now, all of those factors, I believe, line up with the guidance that you've discussed previously as to what constitutes unique circumstances, and I'd like to add a few more. And it's important to note that when these bills were originally considered in the General Assembly, the unique circumstances provision was not originally in there. And I sent an email to the Secretary's office at the time, and this was March 15, 2007. And I just want to read briefly from that, because the bill was then with the Governor's office. It did not have this language in it. And I'd advocated for taking a 10-year average of assessments so that you smoothed out the spikes that we were seeing. But I also said that the legislation provided no mechanism to consider unique circumstances. No two pieces of real estate are the same, nor are two owners the same. Each property may have been acquired and held differently. There may be equity in treating the owners differently depending on the circumstances. There may not. Giving the MRC the discretion to ask to receive a lower price in any given case should be allowed. They make judgment calls in other matters. They can make them here as well. The point is we give discretion to agencies to make decisions like this all the time, and this should not be any different. This is particularly so when viewed in the context of starting from a percentage of assessed value and allowing them to reduce the number based on specific circumstances. So the legislation was amended to include the phrase unique circumstances. And there's some other factors that I want you to consider here. This property, which is really underlying what we would contend is lawful fill. You own the footprint, we own the dirt on top of it, basically. And the Commonwealth no longer has any recreational or natural resources, no interest to preserve that type of property in this circumstance. It's filled. It has no aquatic value. And it's not going to have any aquatic value because the Commonwealth is not going to come with a bulldozer and take this property up and put it somewhere else to restore that area of the river bottom. It would cost millions of dollars to do so. We put this to productive use. We're here because we couldn't obtain title insurance. We had no notice up until that point that the Commonwealth even had a claim to this property. At no time was such a claim asserted. We went to the legislature to clear title. I would argue that we couldn't sue you because of sovereign immunity to quiet title, which would normally be the case when two landowners have a dispute. So we had no recourse to the courts. This was filled a long time ago. And this is not the case like the FCC auctioning off spectrum. That's a valuable resource that has use today. And the FCC in that instance is charged with getting the highest price for that valuable resource. Here, this is a resource that has no value to the Commonwealth, and it's not a landowner who caused that that is before you. It is someone who took title subsequent to that, given that it was lawful fill. This is an arbitrary formula, 25% of the 10-year assessed average. I've already demonstrated that there's a problem with the 10-year assessed average when you learn that the assessments have been overstated for those 10 years, and you only have 3 years of recourse on that for taxes, but it goes to the underlying number that we have to pay the commission. And I also say that a finding here does not bind you in the future. I know the hesitancy to set precedent, but these are unique circumstances in each and every case. Some may be more meritorious than others. And I would note that previously, I was here last August, and we were considering non-water dependent structures, and there were several of them. And there was a staff report that said approval here is not precedential in as much as they represent a unique set of circumstances. So this is not a new concept to the commission. And finally, I would say that to the extent that we can reasonably disagree that perhaps the line could have been here, I would also note that in one of these lithographs, there was an indication that perhaps since there were structures here, this could have been filled property. Well, if that were the case, then another section of this here arguably could have been lawfully filled and not subject to this proceeding and used as part of the calculation price. We have no way of going back to knowing that for sure, but at the end of the day, I think that the benefit of the doubt should rest with the landowner. Because I would point out that in 28.2, 1200.1, that gives you the valuation at the very end, it says that any such determination, meaning unique circumstances, is not subject to judicial review. This is it. We don't get to appeal to a higher authority. This rests with you. And as such, we would ask, and in my letter, the supplemental letter, I ask for what I believe to be a maximum of a 50% reduction from the $99,199.93 to approximately $49,599.96. And that's the request that I make of the commission, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I appreciate your indulgence on my going on. But it's been a 3-year process, so thank you.
You've encapsulated 3 years very well. Any questions of Mr. Nolan? Excuse me, Mr. Tankard.
A couple things. First, you mentioned that this property has been overstated in value by 20%, or is it that the land mass was in fact less?
Excellent question. It's 20%, and the land mass is 20% is being taxed. We're being assessed on 20% more land than we own, than we actually have in our survey. Now, I extrapolated that to reduce for each of the 10 years a 20% reduction. Actually, it's 19.82%. And then recalculated that based on the same drawing of the line here that Mr. Grab did. And happy to at least provide you, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Please.
A copy of that. To at least demonstrate that there was a discrepancy, we were unaware of it, we had no survey to check our tax tickets. When they came, we paid them and went on. We can only go back 3 years to get $8,000, and the reality is that probably will not be enough to go back. And so,
follow-up question?
Mr. Tanker.
At the same time, it seems like this property, it's, you mentioned it's productive use, I think is the two words you used. I mean, so the productive use of this property was a dry dock, and would it make any difference in the use and thus the value that 20% less land is involved?
I think that it would. I mean, it's. I know that going forward, the assessor's office will charge us with less land. We would articulate that, yes, that to the extent that assessments have been rising over the past 10 years, that if we owned less, that has to impact the assessed value, particularly given the amount. It's 0.707 acres. If it were less than 5%, I would agree with you. But this is 19.82% less property. And to me, that merits some consideration. And quite honestly, this really was not considered when we were doing this. And, you know, but for a conversation last week with Mr. Grab, I'm not sure that we would have stumbled upon this in such a timely fashion. But that in conjunction with the fact that this has been held by either in the corporate form or in the family LLC, beneficial ownership of some type has been with the town for you know, over 60 years. Any transfer out has been in a close transaction. It's not been arm's length so that you have the due diligence that normally takes place. This was a planning tool. Issue of notice. We had no notice of the Commonwealth's claim. And again, not a situation where we fill it and say, hey, we had no notice of your claim and we filled all this property. That's not what this is. This has been filled for, you know, the better part of, I would say, probably 100 years.
Further questions? Mr. Holland, then Mr. Schick.
Do you intend to pursue the discrepancy of the 20%?
We would hope to, and have to speak to the client about that. The reality is that the maximum that I think that we would recover in that instance, because we can only go back 3 years, and that's taxes paid. And if we assume that it's a 19.82% reduction in assessed value for those 3 years based on the tax rate, that's approximately $8,200. I mean, that's what we would recover back for taxes paid during that time period.
But if you go back and there is a difference in the mass it should have been, then possibly we could consider going back to 10 years based on that.
Well, I would say that that's correct. You know, our intent in calling the assessor's office was to prove Mr. Grab wrong, and we could not do that.
Again, staff.
Because my calculation, and what I had done was I had added, basically, to get the ratio, all four areas. And what I'd done was divide these two by all four. And I'd come up with the 90,000 prior to learning that, you know, reasonable people could disagree, but there was this pie-shaped sliver here that arguably was never subaqueous. And as Mr. Grab indicated, what we want to do is we do want to take title to this area, to the red line, so that we don't have a title issue in the future over this area. That's the record. That's the request before you.
Sir, did the assessor's office concur that, in fact, that for future valuation, that there is less?
My understanding, and I work with Al Taylor in our office, was that we will be assessed on less land mass going forward, consistent with our survey. July 1 of this year.
Further questions? I'd like to hear from Mr. Grab. Can you come forward? Just to wish straight, I've heard what Mr. Nolan had to say about the 20%. Give me staff's position, perspective, how that reflects on what would be the overall reduction of staff's recommendation if we took his argument.
Well, the discussion that we initially
about
had...
About the assessed aspect.
The assessed. Right. The initial discussion, that based on the percentages that Chris said, is Chris was taking and assuming that Norfolk was, in fact, assessing for the entire parcel, which included current subaqueous unfilled lands.
Right.
And he was basing it on that. We got into a discussion as to what the legislature meant when it talked about, you know, the parcel being transferred as a part of the larger parcel being assessed. My understanding, having sat through some of the hearings, was that the whole thrust behind the legislature's action was dealing with upland property, property that had been filled, and therefore staff's perspective was we're looking at the filled property, not a platted parcel of property which currently extends out in the water. And so Chris called initially to see if, in fact, Norfolk was assessing on the subaqueous. Norfolk is not assessing on the subaqueous, but their calculation on what they termed the upland fill is larger. Now, whether that extends into the Front Street area or how they come up with it, I don't know, but it's basically, you know, on the fill as it currently exists. So staff's position would be on that basis, not to basically grant it. I did tell Chris, I said, well, if you believe you can go back 3 years, and it's not that the locality is assessing state property, if you want to provide a new 3-year assessment, which would then be 3 of the 10, I'd be willing to, at a staff level, to take that, which would be something less than the 597,000, I think was what the average tenure was. And if it turned out to be 580,000, then you take 66% of that and then 25%. So there would be a reduction, given the fact that this has stretched on and the fact that it may only make a small difference in the overall fee. Chris decided he didn't think his client was going to pursue that, but it's certainly up to the commission. We at staff level just tried to use, you know, from a public trust standpoint, you know, that we erred on the side of the Commonwealth.
My concern was in performing the equation, the number that's plugged in based on the assessment, the 10-year assessment, of which Mr. Nolan is asserting that it's inflated due to the fact that they have been charged too much for 10 years. I'd like to know if you take into consideration the error of assessment and plug that in to the 25% rule, what number do we come out with?
Well, I mean, you have to, what you're doing is you're looking at this figure here. The acreage hasn't changed. If Mr. Nolan is able to say the last 3 years, based on the rate that the city is assessing and the square footage that it actually is, this turns out to average $575,410. I mean, this is where the reduction would occur. It wouldn't be 20% of the overall, but if he, you know, the reduction for the last 3 years, then you would take 66.42% of that and come up with a number, which would then lead you to the 99. I have no idea right now what this number would be.
Well, I think at a minimum, from a unique circumstance, that the he should not be penalized for what's been overcharged. I mean, that everything, this whole equation is based upon certain metrics that go in, certain things. And if one is faulty and he's required to pay more due to something that's at fault, of no fault to his own, I do believe he should get the benefit, as personally, I'm just talking, of reduction of what that error is. But the 50% rule, or and I really do believe that from a consistency perspective, our rule of thumb should be to stay the course as far as the 25% rule is with the metrics that are plugged in there, unless something can be demonstrated such as this. This is certainly different than anything that we've had before. But at the same time, I don't think we should use this as a foothold to inflate a reduction. That's my concern.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand completely, and to give you sort of the bookends, if
please,
you will, you know, staff is at 99. If you went back and the calculations that I've done, if you change the assessments, that 597 would actually be for the full 10 years, not just three. So this is the bookend.
And that's what you should be.
That would be 478,900, which Mr. Graff's correct. Nonetheless, you would still multiply that by the 66.42 and then the subsequent number by 25%. And that's where I got the 79,509.37. You know, that is one of many things that we've asked you to consider, but that's the bookend. And I cannot objectify ownership for 60-some years. A line that could be drawn slightly, you know, in a more easterly direction, and what that would mean. And when you roll all this up, what is it? And I think that's where, unfortunately, there's a little bit of arbitrariness in deciding that. But I think it's worth something. And that's why we're here. And, in fact, had we been assessed out to the slip lines, I would be here disagreeing with Bob, but I can't represent that we were. He was correct. But nonetheless, I think you've got at least one objective criteria and then some other subjective criteria, and that's what I've based my request on.
I think Council has a comment. First, then we'll go.
No, go ahead.
Mr. Schick?
I just see as a former statistician, formulas are only as good as definitions that are provided. And although, you know, state law only allows you to go back 3 years to get your money back from overpaid taxes, that doesn't bear on the fact that the definition of this is a 10-year assessment.
Correct. That's apples and oranges.
Yes. And I do see how they can be connected in some fashion, but the legislature has told us they want 10-year average of assessment, and we need to find out what a true assessment of the property is, and if the assessment has been faulty in some respect, we've got to get to the bottom of that and figure out what that hard number is before we can figure out what the end 25% of that is.
Well, let me ask this for what it's worth. I think I know where we're going. Y'all can consider to continue to debate the other unique circumstances that Mr. Nolan has proffered to you. But I would suggest that we know where we need to go as far as the assessed value that deals with this specific formula is concerned, based upon what information we may ultimately receive as far as the corrected assessed value or assessments are concerned. I don't have a problem. Staff has adequately done these calculations. If we can consider that, and that's just a starting point. I'm not advocating anything other than that, but that's a starting point that if there is a reduction that should be taken into consideration based on an over-assessment, that staff calculate that and we move along from there.
For the entire 10 years?
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
Mr. Tankard?
I agree. I mean, it seems to me that the calculations Mr. Nolan's provided us that give a 10-year average assessment of 478,900 would be applicable in this case, and we should move forward and allow this conveyance to be done at a price of $79,509.37.
Is that a motion?
Yes, it is, sir.
Motion made by Mr. Tank. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Robbins. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Let's do that subject to validation of that amount.
Yes.
By staff.
Correct. And Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'm happy to supply the information to staff, and I'm a lawyer, not an accountant.
And I'm a commissioner, so obviously I can't count past eight, so you see why I want staff to handle it.
Understood. Will we need to come back?
No, sir.
The next commission?
No, sir.
We'll allow the staff to determine the...
Wait a minute.
You will have to come back anyway to get the form of the deed approved, and at
correct.
That time, the compensation can be finalized by the commission.
Okay.
How does that sound?
All right.
Good.
Thank,
thank you.
Members, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next matter before the commission is
right.
Fort Norfolk.
But for clarification,
yes.
we have used the information provided by Mr. Nolan on behalf of his client.
Mm-hmm.
It would be staff's intent
to continue to use
Mr. Nolan to work with the assessor to come up with what the values are, and then if it turns out to be $79,000, I don't anticipate staff engaging in a dialogue with the assessor on the over.
He's sworn by the Supreme Court.
Okay. Well.
Good enough for me.
Yeah, I will. We've had a good working relationship.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris.
Bye-bye.